everyone, and welcome to Yahoo Finance Presents. I'm Alexis Christophorus, and we have a treat for you today. We have the actors of the Lehman Trilogy on Broadway, Simon Russell Beale, Adam Godley, and Adrian Lester. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Congratulations, because Broadway has truly embraced this show. Simon, I'm going to start with you. What does it feel like to be back in front of a live audience after nearly 2 years of being shut down?
Well, can I first say, talk about what it was like to stop? Because we did four shows in what seems like years ago of this play, and then we suddenly had to stop, and then it was all a bit of a shock. So for a year and a half, we've been sort of in suspended animation, it's absolutely marvelous to get back. And the audiences have been so generous, and there've been lots of people, which we didn't necessarily expect, because people were wary, I think, of coming back to the theatre. But thank goodness they have, and it's terrific. I mean, last night, for instance, they were absolutely marvellous, weren't they, boys? In their response. So
yeah, it's nice. You know, it's nice. A couple of people have said that they've got a bit very moved, and not just, you know, by performance or anything like that, but just by being in an audience again and having that massive collective response of hearing everyone laugh or, you know, react with pleasure or displeasure or whatever at what's going on. That collective experience has really hit them, and they're desperate to go and see more plays.
Yeah, that was definitely my...
Sometimes a round of applause as the curtain goes up, which is a, you know,
yes.
It's like, we made it.
Do you remember Sam Mendes, our director, made a speech on the very first night, which was actually a wonderful speech, just saying thanks to the audience for coming at all and just getting it all going again. It was very moving, actually.
Yeah, that I definitely experienced all of that being back in that seat, you know, with the anticipation of waiting for that curtain to rise. And frankly, I didn't know what to expect. You know, having covered the Lehman, collapse myself, being a finance reporter, I was very curious about how this story was going to be told. But before we get into the nitty gritty, Adam, tell me what it feels like to tell this particular story in New York City, blocks away from where the Lehman collapse occurred, because this story in many ways is a very personal one, I think, for the city of New York.
Yeah, and we found this in our previous run in New York when we were at the Armory, where I think you first saw it. Telling this story in America, and particularly in this city, New York, feels completely different for us. There's so much, as you've said, of this story that hits home to people. They're working at Lehman, they work in the financial industry, they work in the city, New York. The play is also very much about New York. And a lot of the things we reference, I've said this elsewhere, to a London audience, we're presenting an exotic world. And to a New York audience, we're talking about them and their life and their city. So we very much felt like we're bringing the show back home. And it's very noticeable that there are things that the audience here will chuckle about or you know, make some kind of vocalization about, because they understand it on a very deep personal level. And it's completely different to how it was in London, where people would, the response is sort of slightly different.
You know, Adrian, I want to ask you about the boxes, because again, as somebody who covered this story, I have a real visual. I can remember very clearly the employees of Lehman pouring out of the building with their belongings in those boxes after they went bankrupt. And boxes are a big part of your set. They're part of the storytelling throughout the 3 hours. Tell us about the importance of those boxes.
Well, they contain a life. Really, everyone who walked out with a box in their hand had their sort of financial life, their professional life with Lehman's in that box. And as they were exiting, I think even now, walking out of an office with one of those boxes has become a symbol for someone who's been let go, and they're carrying all their hopes and dreams, and also probably their pension statements in that box as they leave. But I joined the cast for this run on Broadway, and so the development of the idea of the boxes, I think Simon and Adam can talk to that much more. But I think it came from the images that were seen when the employees were leaving the building and carrying those boxes in their gray or navy blue suits. And that was a lasting image that Sam sort of started with and wanted to play with when he started to put the play on its feet.
Mm-hmm. When we developed the show at the very beginning, we had a sort of blank canvas about what we could use to tell the story. And we had sort of props around the room, coffee machines. I know it's sensitive, but it was all set in an office to explain to those who haven't seen it. So it had lots of stuff. And gradually it whittled down to these boxes, didn't it, Adam? And that's what, as you say, Alexis, the image that we have of that crisis is of the people leaving the boxes. So that was the one that stuck. And we realised that we could actually probably build most things just with the boxes. And that's how it ended up.
Yeah, it's brilliant the way you use them. Sorry. Yeah. No, go right ahead.
I was going to say, you know, as a sort of general exercise in kind of minimalism also, we wanted to, I think the idea was also that everything the three brothers used to tell this epic story, any props that they use are things that you would find in that conference room on the top of that building. As Zeblin's design suggests in our design.
You know, you mentioned the great Sam Mendes, of course, the Oscar-winning Sam Mendes, who directs this play. As much as it is a theatrical production, I felt there were a lot of cinematic elements to the staging. Maybe, you know, Adam, do you want to take a stab at that? You know, how did that help you sort of storytell and live in the moment as the actor?
Well, you know, as I said, we're telling a story that lasts 160 years and in some detail. And, you know, we've got to do that with a degree of speed and to make it as entertaining and clear as possible to the audience. So we've got this huge screen that wraps around Ez Devlin's glass box, which is the set, this revolving glass box. And Luke Halls, who developed those projections, was able to suggest different parts of the world, different moods, all sorts of things with a kind of visual narrative that's going on at the same time as we're telling the story. And because the walls of the set are all glass, you're able to see through all the windows behind us. We're often not that aware of what the audience is seeing. But I think the net result for the audience is something visually very spectacular and extraordinary and unusual for theatre. And I think, as you said, that's part of Sam's, you know, what he's learned in film that he's brought to the theatre, for sure.
The funny thing, as you say, we very rarely, there are quite a few bits that I've never, ever seen.
That is funny to think
apparently
of,
they're gorgeous, but I've never seen
too busy acting to look
watch it, because you'll be really impressed. You cover a lot of ground, Adam, as you said, you know, over 160 years through world wars, through the Great Depression. Adrian, is there this seminal event that fundamentally changed the Lehman Brothers business, do you think?
I think it's at the point where they stop trading things, tangible, physical things for money, and start trading the ideas of things for money. They start going into futures. They start talking about returns and prospects and so on. And there's a point where my character says that money is numbers, money is a ghost, money is air. And when the thing that broke the Lehman Brothers in 2008, I think, was an idea that without the belief, without the will from people to hold the idea of getting their money back in the future, if they want their money now, if enough people say, I've had enough, I want my money back now, the banks would collapse. And that's what happened, basically.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sum it up in a simplistic form. I mean, you're the expert. But in a way, you see the play move from the idea of trading, you know, buying and selling tangible objects.
Like to, cotton, right?
Like cotton, right. To the idea of trading and what those numbers mean for millions of people.
Yeah, there's a line I believe your character says, Adrian. Well, first of all, for those who aren't familiar, each of you plays many, many characters throughout, but not with different costumes. It's amazing to watch how you just become these different people with the way you're standing or the way you're speaking. And Adrian, it's when you're another character, I think somebody in marketing, when the company has become much more mature, and you say something like, and I'm paraphrasing, soon they'll give us money they don't have for things they don't need.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of the whole greed, you know, greed is good from Wall Street. Do you think, and anyone who wants to answer here, that we do see this story evolve where greed is sort of at the core?
Anybody want to jump in?
Yeah, I mean,
I should have assigned it.
I think the play suggests Massini, Stefano Massini, who wrote the work that this play is sort of created out of, wanted to suggest, as Adrian has just said, that once a company becomes untethered from providing a service, once the people within the company are no longer a part of their community, you're kind of potentially spinning out of control. There's nothing anchoring you to anything. And I think that's what you see gradually happen during the course of the 160 years. Mm-hmm. They started out providing a service for their community. And by the end, it's not tethered to anything. So I think that there's definitely that suggestion in there. Mm-hmm. And there's also the spiritual connection as well, which is sort of mapped out through the play.
Yeah, the one thing that the play, I think, looks at with great respect is their connection to each other as brothers, the three characters to start, and their connection to their faith. And then quite quickly you see that out of tragedy they learn to exploit need and to start to make money on the back of suffering. And once that starts to happen, then they're off and running very slowly. But that's what the play describes. Many people come thinking they're going to see a very specific and detailed breakdown of the 2008 crash. And that's not what happens. Right. What you see is a very detailed and specific breakdown of what led up to that over 160 years.
And I think it's difficult to define at what point ambition becomes greed, for instance. You know, when you
how much is enough?
How much is enough? Mm-hmm. And picking up on the other thing that Adrian pointed out, which goes right from the very start of the play, this thing about belief, that a system, I'm no economic expert by no means, but I mean, at some point, an economic system has to rely on people's trust in its value and its workability. Yeah. And right from the very beginning, these three brothers are going around saying, believe in us, believe in us. And people do up until the point when they don't. And then the belief goes. And that word belief, trust me, believe in it.
Yeah.
And what Adrian points out about suddenly people not trusting and then wanting to sell their shares en masse is a terrible moment because the belief has gone. So it's a very intangible behavior. This is the thing of behavioral economics, isn't there? It's a very intangible moment when behavioral economics hits hard and it's not about things you can really work out. It's about non-specific things like belief.
Mm-hmm. You know, it is true that the play does not really take head on what happened in 2008. But in many ways, I found the part about the Great Depression and what happened during the Great Crash of 1929 was in many ways a foreshadowing. And what I especially took away was that during your conversation, I forget who says this, you were talking about how Lehman Brothers didn't want to be among the first banks to fail because the government would allow that to happen and then they would step in. But if you fast forward 80 years later, Lehman Brothers was, I believe, the second bank to fail behind Bear Stearns. So they weren't that lucky then, right?
That's something that Adam's character says, and it's an extraordinary moment when he says, let's allow some of our competitors to go, but we won't step in to save them. And I think it is you, isn't it, Adam? And
yes, that's
the moment when he's talking to his father, who's I'm playing.
Yes,
his father's very surprised by that, you know, that we don't step in to help. And as you say, that's exactly what happened to them in 2008. It's a mirror image of presumably what happened in 2008.
Yeah, history repeating itself.
I mean, I have to say that in the new version, we had to mention COVID. So the way we did that was to mention the flu epidemic.
The audience definitely laughed at that.
Yeah. Where exactly the same debates were happening about masks. And
yeah,
I believe the New York subway was closed in the early 20th century. So it's quite fun to be able to just tap that in as a...
Yeah, it repeats itself.
And the irony was definitely not lost on the audience. The show is it's 3.5 hours with 2 intermissions. And I never once looked at my watch because I felt like I was engaged the whole time and it really moved quite well. But another thing I did that I didn't expect to do was laugh a lot. Tell me, Adrian, the importance of humor and levity to a show like this.
It's a show about a crash. Really, I mean, some people will think it's just a show about a crash, but laughter, the characters that the three of us managed to find in the piece and how we bring them to life. People laugh out of recognition when, as soon as, I think the very first moment that one of the three brothers becomes someone else is when Simon becomes an owner of a plantation and then becomes a prospective wife for Adam's character. And it's just lovely to have the tension released in the audience in that way. And it's refreshing. It's like a cool drink of water for the mind. And then after that moment of release and laughter, then you re-engage with the story. And so after 3.5 hours, we use that a lot.
I think we enjoy it, don't we? I mean, we enjoy the absurdity of it. I forget that I'm a rather plump 60-year-old with a beard when I'm playing an 18-year-old young girl from Alabama. In my head, that's what I am. So
yeah, it works. And the audience enjoy the journey. They enjoy the fact that they're with us to play. They're three storytellers saying, we're going to be many different people at many different times. And we're going to do that to tell the story. And the audience get in there with us. And it's the most powerful thing in the theatre, really, is to ask the audience to imagine. And they say, okay. And then they go with you and you're both on the journey. It's great.
I know that you each play so many different characters. And in the end, people are not going to understand this unless they see the show, which they need to go do. But Adam, you basically twist yourself to death. You're all doing the twist.
Is one of my favorite moments.
it is phenomenal. It really is. Do you have a favorite character amongst all that you play, Adam?
You know, I love them all. And as the others have said, you know, it's the magic of theatre and that we get to do that live every night in front of an audience, sort of transform from men to women, to children, to babies, to old people. You know, it's wonderful. And it's so challenging and rewarding as an actor to do that. I think, you know, I love them all. Bobby, particularly for me, I think we see his journey. I play him from the age of 6 up until the age of 144. So, you know, that journey I quite enjoy every night. It's exhausting, but it's incredibly rewarding to play. And so for me, it's Bobby, I would say.
Some of the little ones, some of the little ones are great, aren't they? I mean, one of my favorites is an Irish maid who literally has 2 lines, but there's a whole history behind her. And I love her. Yeah, she's tiny,
but it's a great moment.
I also liked your Greek diner guy.
Coming
from a family of Greek diner owners.
I
thought that was very good. And, you know, each of you has had such an illustrious career, an enviable career. And Adrian, I was surprised to find out this is your Broadway debut, but I have to congratulate you because you know how to pick them. what are your first impressions of Broadway?
Well, I'm getting a sort of reduced Broadway experience because it's Broadway in COVID. So the life and the connection between companies and the people coming to see the show and popping around to stage door and all of that sort of the social life that goes with it, the camaraderie and everything, is being felt on faxes and texts and emails rather than in person because we can't do that. But nevertheless, it's wonderful to be here. And I can forget, I'm in a theatre doing a show with 2 great actors that I've admired for years. Don't tell them that. I'm doing this show with them. And then you think you're just in a theatre, but then you step out and go, oh yeah, I'm in New York. Because you just forget. And only when I step out into the street do I go, oh right, yeah, yellow cabs. This is great. It's wonderful. It's been great.
We want to see more of you on Broadway, each of you. At the end of the day, I want to ask each of you this. What is at the core, what is this story to you? Because when I was watching, I'm going, well, it's obviously an immigrant story, but it's also a story about money. It's a story about power. So let's go around the table and start with you, Simon. What at the core is this story mean to you?
I've no idea. And I'm not being evasive. I've no idea. It changes. Sometimes it's an immigrant story. Sometimes it's a story of a sort of potted history of capitalism. Sometimes it's a history of greed. Sometimes it's a history of family fidelity. I really can't put my finger on it. It's an elusive thing, and I think it depends on the person you are watching it, what you take away from it. I think probably that sounds horribly evasive, but I think I'm being
truthful. No, it's not. And it's honest. Adam, what does it mean for you?
I think, you know, it's changed over time. But I think part of it is that it tells the story of how the America that we live in now came to be. Sort of modern America. I think that's a crucial and core part of what this story is.
Sort of the story of American capitalism, really. Yeah.
How, you know, why the country looks like it does, why it functions like it does, mm-hmm. both economically and socially. And I think it attempts to have a look at how we got to that point, how we got to this point.
Mm-hmm. And Adrian, for you?
I'd agree with both men, actually. It is hard to define over 3.5 hours exactly what's being said. But I think what I found fascinating is that when we look at our financial institutions now and our advertising and the way the banks are structured and mortgages and loans and so on, we take that as being, that's just the truth, that's just how it is. But it's nice to go through the play and look at the moments where we could have made another choice, where they could have done something else. But what they decided to do was exploit need. There's a point where Adam's character says, if people will buy instinctively, they'll need banks like they breathe air, which means they'll need banks to survive, which means everyone will borrow, everyone will buy. And then Simon says, the poor do not exist. Everyone will buy discounts, loans, installments, and this is the way we will now do things. Whereas looking at it from this point of view, you think, well, that's just the way the world is. But that was a decision. There was a decision made to make it like that. And I found those moments in the play really exciting, mm-hmm. to think that someone thought about that, created that. It could have been another way. There is another system. We just don't have it.
Yeah. And finally, gentlemen, because I know you actually have a show tonight, you need to go do that too. But when this was happening in real time back in 2008, I'm just curious, were any of you watching it and watching it unfold? And did you ever think there'd be a play about it and that you'd be in it?
I was certainly watching it unfold. I mean, as I said earlier, I'm no expert, but, and you mentioned the image of the boxes. I remember that very, very clearly. And there was a famous picture from the London headquarters of Lehman of people listening to, with their backs to the window. So the photograph was of their backs, mm. and they were being told that their jobs had ended. I remember that very clearly. And that came up in rehearsal, actually, in the original rehearsals. And I couldn't follow the details of the financial crash itself, but I remember it very, very clearly.
Did you guys follow it, Adam, Adrian? Or was it sort of just something going on in the background at the time?
For me, it was really something going on in the background. But of course, the ripples and the repercussions, you know, still feeling even through what we've all been through in the last 18 months. You know, we didn't realize at that moment how it would change the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember trying to follow it. Like Simon says, I'm not a financially a whiz at all, but trying to follow it and thinking, what does this mean for mortgage? What does this mean for the bank that I'm with? What does this mean for savings? And so I kind of had my hand on the button thinking, where should I move things? You know, the little money that I had made and saved as an actor. Mm-hmm. Didn't want it to disappear. So I remember doing that and being wary about that. But the complexity of what happened, I couldn't really grasp.
Yeah, it was tough for all of us. And I cover it, and it was. And of course, it precipitated the Great Recession, something we still refer to now, you know, it's sort of a marker in our economic history. Before I let you go, Adrian, you just brought that up. You said about your own money. Do you guys invest? Do you invest in the stock market?
No.
Who said no?
I don't invest.
No, I don't. Some of my family do. I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
All right. We're going to get you to watch Yahoo Finance more often, and then you'll be able to make your savvy investment decisions. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. It was a real pleasure. Simon Russell Beale, Adam Godley, Adrian Lester, continued success to you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.